Pop-Off makes you think.
I can't believe you just said that.
Pop-Off links to lifestyle.
If you're happy, you'll be successful, and you'll have the right relationships, and you'll make choices that are healthier for you.
Pop-Off makes you smile.
He said, I don't want you pulling his tail or riding him or sitting on him. He said, and if you do that, he said, I will give you a Lassie puppy next year.
Are you serious? Did you get one?
Oh, yes, I did.
Now it's time to Pop Off with Mary Jane Pop.
And it's great to have you with us on Pop Off. Hey, the first brand new show of the brand new year, 2015. And have we got a show for you. A little bit later on, this is one that's going to be hard to talk about because Greg O'Brien, longtime investigative reporter, journalist, etc., well, he found out he has Alzheimer's. And a lot of people would kind of crawl into a hole and pull it dirty and over him, right? Or put a rock in front of the cave. He didn't. He's chronicling. He's going into his own mind of what it's like to go through this Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's, I might add, diagnosis and how to handle it. It's a story that you have to hear. But before we do that, you know, no matter how many times stuff happens to people when they open their mouths when they shouldn't, they still open their mouths when they shouldn't. And we're going to find out about those who were the best and worst communicators of 2014. Stay with us. It's Pop Off. You know we do. Well, I guess they never learn their lesson, because there is no longer a thing called off the record when a microphone is in your face. And according to Decker Communications, there are good communicators and there are bad ones. So for 19 years, they've come up with the best and worst communicators. And Ben Decker, CEO of Decker Communications, has put together the top 10 best and worst for 2014. And the interest, well, the internet, I should say, puts what you say in public in front of their faces all the time. Ben, nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you for having me, Mary Jane.
Now, what was the criterion? I mean, what kind of criteria do you have for the best and the worst?
Well, we look at it throughout the year, and so we get recommendations from clients. We do an internal check-in with our team. We have about 40 people on our team. And everyone puts in ideas of names throughout the year of people that stood out for being very good or people that stood out for being very bad. At the end of the year, we whittle it down to about 10 on each side and see what comes out and see what themes there are.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really how we get there. And we want names that you'll recognize, that people will see and know, versus just a John Doe. It doesn't make any sense. So we do want names that ideally some in business, some in politics, some sports, wherever it may be.
Gotcha. But you know what? There is no John Doe anymore. I mean, with the internet, they get to be famous in a nanosecond.
And that's the biggest challenge for even executives in business to realize you're always on. And the biggest response we get in what we do is people say, you know, when I'm publicly speaking or when I'm present in a presentation, and shifting the mindset to, no, you're always on, and it's how you're coming across. And so we use this list to raise awareness, because communications is one of those areas that it's not always top of mind for people.
Do you find that some of these people put their mouth into action before their mind goes into gear?
Oftentimes the case, yes, as you'll see from our worst. Not so much the best, but more of the worst, yes.
So let's do the best first, okay?
All right.
You had number one is Robin Williams. Why?
We did, and it was a sad year for Robin Williams as far as his death. However, there's a learning point from him. And what he was the best at, and it's something that you, especially being on radio, want, but executives and anyone should really want, and it's the concept of being present. And what that means is I am listening to every word you're saying, and I'm not thinking 2 to 3 sentences ahead. And that's the problem with most of us, even in conversations over a cocktail.
Sounds good. Number two, you had Richard Branson. Why?
So he's a guy that you see traveling the world, always a smile on his face and living off, you know, Necker Island, what
have
you.
Yeah, well, he can afford it.
Well, Well, he's got the life we all want, but he stood out this year because something happened with, Virgin America had a big crash of one of their ships that went up to space, and he addressed it immediately. And he stood out in a big way of how to handle a crisis. And that is very authentic, very true. And he wasn't Mr. Smiling Richard Branson. There was a lot more meat to the bone that you'd normally see other than what he's traveling around on his plane.
That sounds good. Now, Wendy Clark, I don't know that much about Wendy Clark.
She's an executive that works for Coke, and she's fairly well-known, especially in the social media online presence. And that's her focus. And we're always looking for business folks that stand out and do really what we coach and we teach, and that is to be authentic, to be memorable, to connect with someone as you're speaking to them, whether it be one or 1,000. And she's been on the speaking circuit for Coke, and we've had clients come up to us and say, I want to be like Wendy Clark. And so that's how she got on our radar this year, to be honest. We weren't aware of her ourselves. So we started to follow her, and we said, you know what, let's try to model that, because that's so much of what we train and teach.
Now, do you get the feeling sometimes that these people, they're engaging, they're authentic, they're charismatic, and if they just learn to do that, are they really?
Well, if you fake it, it's usually seen. Mm-hmm. So we don't encourage people to fake it. We want people to be authentic and be real, but so much of that starts with an awareness. And so you got to get on video. You got to actually look at yourself, as I'm sure you do, listen to yourself on the radio to realize,
No, I don't.
Oh, stop it.
I don't. No, seriously. I don't like to listen to myself.
But you've worked on your voice early in your career to realize, I got to bring more affect in my voice versus talk like this. And
No, I didn't. I was an opera major.
Well, then you got lucky. You're one of the few lucky ones. Most of us have to work on it.
Gotcha. Now, number four was Derek Jeter, New York Yankees. But, you know, why him?
He exudes this perfect mix, what we call humble confidence. There is a humility to him that comes across almost an aw shucks, this good-looking athlete that's been great. But there's a confidence about him. And that mix is so hard to get to, but it's almost the ideal of what we all want, of a willingness to take feedback, to be spoken to be approachable, but being confident and credible in whatever you say.
Okay. Now, you've got Jimmy Fallon as number five because you say he took the Tonight Show to new heights. I'm not sure. I watch him. I really do. And I'm always, open to the possibilities. My only problem with him is I think he gets a little too silly too much. I mean, being silly is fine. But when you do it all the time, it kind of gets old.
No doubt he does get silly, but I was listening to your radio station right before I came on, and the gentleman before was tying you to Jimmy Fallon for getting him to speak about things that he wouldn't normally speak about. I thought that was an interesting tie-in, where what Jimmy Fallon does is he exudes trust, and I think that's something that the gentleman before hinted at, but he invites us into his home. It's not so much the monologue. If you just look at the interviews, there's an authenticity. There's a care. He's actually interested in what he's asking, and he shows it of any guest that he's on. And that's why I think he's taking it to new heights, no doubt.
He should. He's getting paid enough. He should be caring. Now, Adam Silver. Really?
So Adam Silver, if you've watched him in Q&A, he's fantastic in Q&A.
And, of course, he's with the NBA. Okay.
He's with the NBA. So he is the commissioner of the NBA. He took over for David Silver. Mm-hmm. And this year they had a lot of controversy with the Donald Sterling, who, hint, hint, was our number one worst, but we'll get back to that. Adam Silver, how he handled it was really a great example of hit it head on. But compared to, like, say, Roger Goodell, who's also on the worst, there's emotion in what he's describing and what he's going through and how he represents the NBA and that a certain action or behavior is not tolerated. But it's believable because of how he's saying it. And there's really motion in that vocal variety in what he says.
Amazing. Now, number seven, you've got Lupita, and I do not know how to pronounce her last name. I know.
Oh, don't make me do it.
Oh, okay. I think it's Nyong'o, isn't it?
You got it right. I'll say
okay.
Ditto.
Okay. And you say she has sincerity, she has grace. I agree with you there, but I think it's because she's early on in her career.
Well, it's almost the example that you don't need such a loud voice to be strong. And she's this example that when you listen to her, when you see her, she really pulls in the audience. And it's so much through some of the behaviors that we try to coach every day around eye communication, around vocal variety, and realizing, showing that you just want to be consistent in what you say. And she is just, there's such a true authenticity that comes out.
Hmm.
And she was on our roadmap this year because of some of the awards she won.
Gotcha. Now, Kathy Murphy is number 8. Again, I'm not familiar with Kathy Murphy. I guess I'm not into the high finance.
Well, she is high up in finance. She works for Fidelity, and she got on our radar also through people saying, I want to be like that. And that's we work with many Fortune 500 companies, but we don't know every executive. And so although we'd love to say we coached her, we didn't. And so that takes away any conflict of interest. But she is this great example of strength in what she says, but also mixing it up and sharing stories. And she's done that through panels, through speeches, and she's been pretty mainstream. And so that's why how she got on our radar.
Now, singer Taylor Swift, number 9. And I like what you say about her, that she puts herself into the audience's shoes.
And I suppose that could be a theme of a lot of the best, if you're looking for themes from best compared to worst. But, you know, we try to stay away from sensationalism or she has the best sold album. Why is that? What is it she's doing? We try to stay away from that and just look at, well, what's going on? What do they stand out? And she has a statement that says she looks at her fans as she's the big sister, as she's looking out for them. Mm-hmm. And what that ties into is just this listener focus that is almost unparalleled. She really looks at things from the other side and puts it in ways to show she cares, to show she's thinking about what they're going through. And that's what really pulls us into her.
Well, isn't that's a sign of a good performer.
It's a good performer, but again, if you fake it, you'll be found out. And
oh, yeah.
I don't think it's fake.
Right, right. Well, I think she loves what she's doing. I think that counts a lot, too, if you love what you're doing.
Yes, it does show.
Yeah. Now, the last one, number 10, you say he's the best in the nest. Which nest and why?
Well, Tony Fadell, he was the CEO of Nest, and he sold to Google this last year. And if you've seen him, and a lot of people haven't seen him, so we want to bring some of these people that are great communicators
to the
radar.
Yeah, I've never seen him.
Yeah. Well, he was recommended through a couple tweets to us, and so he got on our radar because of that. And also, Nest is a I'm not putting a promo. I don't have it myself yet, but it allows you to control your temperature in your house and the HVAC. But it's a fantastic tool that Google now runs. But he was the lead of it. He was the voice of it. He was the face of Nest. And once you take a look on YouTube of some of his communication experiences, he's fantastic. I mean, you like him immediately. And if you even look at the picture of him that we posted, it's just this big smile. And so what can we take away? Be light, be engaging, be fun. And that makes people want to listen to you.
Now, those are the top 10 best. Now we got to have the top 10 worst. And right at the top of the list for you was Donald Sterling. And that's because he could, you know what? He had diarrhea of the mouth.
Well, you started this show saying, you know, there's no such thing as private speaking. And that's the tagline to him. But more so, how he handled the challenge of basically being caught red-handed mm-hmm. and saying what he said, he stayed silent. He didn't address it. And then when he did address the racism remarks, he went on the attack and attacked Magic Johnson or attacked whoever it was that he could attack, and it just continued to help him pummel. And what you got to do is come straight and be back to the – if you hide it, it will show eventually. And it definitely showed with him, and there's no such thing as private speaking.
Now, number 2, you have, of course, former Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. Why was he put on the list?
Well, he was let go,
yeah.
Secretary of Defense, and he was a very successful senator. But what the learning point here, and again, Mary Jane, there's got to be a learning point for every one of these, best and worst. And when he got on the hot seat, he crumbles. And there's something similar with Jill Abramson as we get to her. But in how they exude confidence, competence in what they're saying, we use a term that says, the effectiveness of your communications determines the effectiveness of your life. And what that means is if you crumble, you won't be as effective. And when he was attacked, the ums, the uhs, he did not look confident in what he was saying. And that's a takeaway. You can mm-hmm. be great on a podium, but if you can't handle the attacks, you got to be aware of that.
Yeah, and the sad part is that a lot of these people, I'm sure, are very authentic on the inside or dedicated to what they do, but they just can't communicate.
Well, my wife and I just wrote a book. We run Decker Communications, and we make a statement saying the last four presidential candidates, that lost, we will make an argument that they probably could have and should have won based on we just couldn't get to know them. If they could let their hair down and be more real, mm-hmm. that would have helped them in the polls and get more votes. It's an interesting discussion.
Oh, absolutely. Now, number three you have is Michael Bay. I'm not sure I know about Michael Bay.
Michael Bay is the action star director. So he's done movies like Transformers.
Ah.
And I wish I could say all the other movies he's done. But he's known as a top power director, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
He was at CES this year. And again, we try to stay away from sensationalism. But this is a one instance that we get to see across the board in corporate America and Fortune 500 companies. People that are stuck to a teleprompter, which we are not fans of. We're going to always try to get people off of teleprompters because you're reading, you're not as real. And his teleprompter went down, and he ended up walking off. And if you see it, it's on our blog, on our top 10. It's sad. It makes you cringe because you feel empathy for him. But the learning point is to get out of our own way. We think it's just the words we say, but it makes you lose sight of the present moment, back to Robin Williams, and just take what you're given, where it was a pretty easy assignment just to describe a TV, and he couldn't do it, and he got caught up.
Well, you know, that happens, at least from my point of view, because I've been an anchor on both radio and television and talk shows, et cetera. You see that with some news, not reporters, but anchors, news anchors.
Yeah.
If the teleprompter goes out, they can't tell you the story. And it's like, wait a minute, if you've been on the street and you're a street reporter, you're going to know the story. So they should kind of go that route first before they put them in front of a teleprompter, because otherwise, like you said, when the teleprompter goes down, so do they.
Busy people are busy, and so they use the path of least resistance, which teleprompter is. And sometimes it's needed, sometimes it's necessary. Some people can do it well. Michelle Obama is an example. She can do it pretty well compared to her husband, which I know we'll get to. But if you use it as a crutch, it can lead to disaster, and that's the learning point there.
Now, good old Roger Goodell, how many times has he stepped into it?
Well, this year was a challenge for him with the Ray Rice situation. He's a two-time offender for us.
He was on our list.
Well, we put him on our list back in 2011,
and
he was very meek, almost came across as shy. He's fixed that part. He's not as meek and shy. He's stronger, but now the problem is it's just so wooden. There's no emotion in what he says, and I referenced him earlier compared to Adam Silver, who shows a little more emotion, changes it with his voice, emphasizes certain areas versus not. Roger Goodell does not do that. It's just an emotionless wooden board, and it turns into a talking suit.
Mm. What about Jill Abramson, number five?
Well, on our blog, we referenced a couple different videos. One is she did a commencement, and she was pretty fantastic. Most of her communicating, she got let go of the New York Times, so people know her from that.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fantastic writer. But again, once under the gun, once under Q&A, terrible. I mean, if you watch the video, the the uhs, the doubt, the question, it sounds like she doesn't believe what she's saying. And that's the takeaway. You got to believe what you're saying, but you got to show that you believe.
Hmm. Gotcha. Now, number eight is Rick Wild. Again, I don't know that much about Rick Wild.
Well, you're in California. A lot of Californians saw the World Series. As did many people in St. Louis. Now, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but if you watch the World Series, at the end of the World Series, there's a guy from Chevrolet that gave a Chevy Colorado to Baumgartner, who was the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we know this, and I didn't see it live, but I got 100 tweets or messages or emails saying, oh, Rick Wild, you got to put him on your 10 worst. So, unfortunately, he's a face for really what the problem is. And we're focused on the people that prep people. And so, for example, Rick Wild got prepped of, hey, you need to say these 10 features of this truck as you give the keys to this athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that gets in his head. And how can he be back to the point of being present and just enjoying the moment, end of the World Series, they get to give a a truck to an athlete, this is exciting and just represent the brand well. Unfortunately, he had note cards and he's trying to read it and talk about the technology and stuff. And so it turned into a little bit of a mess. And so he's not the focus of this worst. It's the people that prep, people that speak.
No,
and you
got to
do it in the right way.
I agree. At the end of the Rose Parade in Anaheim, it was amazing because it was a great thing. They had a veteran who had two bronze or two Purple Hearts, had been in overseas a couple of times, et cetera, was wounded. He was out there with his wife and their little baby, and here's the representative from Wells Fargo presenting this man with a house. This is like their 200th house that they're presenting to veterans who are coming back who've been wounded. He was terrible. It's like, yeah, we have this house. Thank you for your service. Here's the keys. it's like it wasn't warm at all. I wish it would have been warmer.
Let's tag it up to missed opportunities. And that's really the focus here. It's not going to make or break a Wells Fargo or a Chevy,
No. But
they're missed opportunities. And so much of the focus of what we do and how we work with people is to not allow any missed opportunities. So that is a major missed opportunity that millions of people saw.
Now, number 9, Richard, is it Leggett?
I believe it's Leggett.
Leggett, okay. What did he do?
So he is head of NSA, deputy director, and he first got on really the radar. If you don't follow politics, he was on a TED Talk with Snowden. And so Snowden went to TED, and they talked through it through a computer, a robot type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And after, they allowed dialogue and response from NSA. And that's really where he got on our radar of – it was so deadpanned, so monotone. He would talk about things that were positive about the NSA, but say it in this voice, Mary Jane, and as I'm talking, how great we are. And again, let's stick with missed opportunities. This is a fantastic opportunity to show, if he believes Snowden is wrong, to show it with emotion, to show it with an emphasis, to change up your facial features of what he feels versus what he doesn't feel. Unfortunately, it was just deadpan with a ton of ums and uhs and and fillers, as we call them.
Well, and the thing is, if you are dedicated, if you are loyal, if you are charismatic toward whatever subject matter or whoever you are or whatever you represent, it, like you said, it'll come over. And if you're not, maybe he just doesn't care or he just doesn't have the ability to have that charisma.
Well, showing what you believe. So much of the challenge of what we do in communications coaching training is getting people to be consistent. I might believe this chair is a beautiful chair, and I want to tell you about it and sell it to you, but I have to describe the legs and the upholstery and the design, and I get stuck into the words, and that can lead to a different experience that I put forward.
Okay, who's number 10?
Our commander-in-chief, Barack Obama.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well,
why
you know,
is it? Because he's not terrific. I mean, to me, Kennedy, even Clinton— Reagan, those were the ones who were terrific. The Bushes, no way.
Master communicators, the first two to three that you shared. And so the thing with Barack Obama, he was on our best, and we, at one point, I think back in 06, we feel strongly the president should be on the best or worst. He is the most public figure, and we want it to be known of what is he doing well or wrong. And when he was on our best, it was during his campaign. And he was fantastic, sharing this vision of hope and going on the campaign trail, speaking from passion and really connecting with any audience, wherever he was, wherever in the country. But since he's become president, for the most part, he's been on our worst. And the reasons are, Mary Jane, the teleprompter of looking back and forth, about 4 seconds each, if you ever watch him. His staccato talk. I mean, if SNL can nail it well, there's an issue there. And they nail him pretty good. They got him good. Here's a quick funny story with him. Is during the Olympics in the summer, he was having an initial conversation with Bob Costas right when the Olympics started. And I'm watching. We have three little boys. And our 10-year-old, Jackson, he kind of turns to us. And this gives a little hint of my family, and I apologize. But he turns to my wife and I and says, "Doesn't the president know what he's doing? He's on national TV. Why is he saying and what is he doing?" And so Kelly and I laugh about that, but we all see the same thing. You see the same thing, and it does not come across as our commander-in-chief. Again, missed opportunity.
Are there some people, though, that no matter how much you try, Ben, I don't care. You're not going to make them a good communicator.
The answer is no. I won't ever agree with that. I think there's always something you can do. Otherwise, I wouldn't do what I do. Part of me is glass half full, and that's what we do as a firm, is we see potential.
Oh, you can make them better, but yes. There are some people that just have a natural. Reagan, he was a natural. He had the charisma. He may not have been the smartest man in the world. He may not, but he surrounded himself with the smart people, and he just had that charisma that he could connect with people.
And he was aware of the experience he put forward. Think of it that way. Think of wanting certain things in the background, knowing where to look, knowing to pause. He was aware.
He was an actor. He should. He knew where the cameras were.
And video feedback, I'm amazed that you haven't heard yourself back, because it's so important to know what you're putting out. And the good thing is you're great. You have a fantastic voice, and you're easy to talk to, as the gentleman said before me. But so many people that are in life, in business, don't have any clue what they're putting forward. They have no idea what their experience is. Mm. And that's the fix. That's the gap that has to be filled.
Now, do you have a website?
We do, Decker.com.
Decker.com. And they can find all these, the best and worst, on that blog. There's a blog, right?
There's a blog. It's tied right into the website. But yes, I don't think we've replaced the top 10. We won't do that for another week or so. But it is at the top of the blog, and we share it right there with all the clips I've referenced.
Fantastic. Hey, Ben, it's been a great pleasure having you with us today. And, you know, looking back, we have to be the judges. If they reach us, they're successful. If they don't reach us, they're not successful. It's that simple.
I love that recap. Thanks so much, Mary Jane.
Thank you. Come back anytime.
All right.
Bye-bye now. Think before you speak. That's what I tell you on Pop Off. Be careful what you say. You don't know who's going to be listening.
Have you checked out khi.com lately? You'll find our live stream link, blogs written by your favorite KHI personalities, along with community happenings and local information. KHI.com is your best source for up-to-the-minute news, sports, and weather for all of the foothills. KHI.com. Take a look and get informed. KHI.com, your online home for the voice of the foothills.
Hello, this is Patrick Mummy, owner and founder of Symmetry for Health. Are you a chiropractor, massage therapist, acupuncturist, personal trainer, or physical therapist? Then we have the certification that you've been looking for. Symmetry for Health is a patented, physics-based corrective exercise program that guarantees client home compliance and pain relief success. Through a three-level program, you can begin to learn how postural alignment therapy and the Align Smart system is critical for your clients to become an active participant in their healing and prevention process. Come join us for our upcoming Level 1 course near you by registering at symmetryforhealth.com.
These courses are approved by the California Acupuncture Board, the California Chiropractic Board of Examiners, the National Certification Board of Therapeutic Massage and Bodywork, and the American Council on Exercise. Do you love to read, but you've got books piling up collecting dust? Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Why not take them to the Almost Perfect Bookstore? Kelly Ulmer will buy them back or trade for new books. Buy, sell, and trade at one stop, the Almost Perfect Bookstore. And you can save 50 to 60% on books that have been traded in. There's even a section for books featured on the Pop Off radio show. It's perfect in these economic times. Why keep books you don't want when you can sell them or trade them in? Don't look for a small book nook either. It's huge, with books on just about any subject you can think of. Once you try it, you'll know it's the perfect way to go. The Almost Perfect Bookstore, 1901 Douglas Boulevard in Roseville. That's 1901 Douglas Boulevard in Roseville. Got questions? Call Kelly at 916-781-7935 or log on to almostperfectbookstore.com. Kelly calls it the Almost Perfect Bookstore, but it's absolutely perfect. The Almost Perfect Bookstore in Roseville.
For your eyes only can see me through the night.
What if you had more than 35 years of newspaper and magazine experience, from writer to investigative reporter and publisher, and then find out you are one of the many millions in the United States with Alzheimer's? He's in the battle of his life, and not going down without a fight. In his book On Pluto, he takes us inside the mind of Alzheimer's. Greg O'Brien is with us on the show today. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thank you very much.
You're
out in Sacramento, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
My wife, Mary Catherine, her parents used to live in Sacramento.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Small world. Small
and
world.
And I was married in Bakersfield.
I'll be darned.
So there you go. But I'm calling from Cape Cod. So
Cape Cod. I don't even know where to begin with something like this, because here, you know, you have a career, you're blossoming, nationally known, and then wham, to get this diagnosis. How did you... How I'd respond. I don't know.
Well, for background purposes, my maternal grandfather and my mother both died of Alzheimer's. So I had somewhat of a front row seat. And I was a family caregiver for my mother on Cape Cod.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, I live on the Cape. We live on the Cape with our three children, Brendan, Colleen, and Connor. And, you know, I travel a lot, but you know, I was the family caregiver, and so I saw up front what this slow progression of the disease can do, and I was educated in that way, and also maybe have another advantage, if that's the right word, by being a journalist and knowing the need to take notes, to study, to be able to understand the story of Alzheimer's. So, you know, when I received the diagnosis, you know, I...
That's what, 10 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah. Actually, less than that. It was... I'm terrible at math. So 2009. So
okay.
How many years is that?
Five.
Your listeners are probably less...
That's about five, 6 years ago. 6 years ago.
Okay, there you go. And I've seen the progression since, but, you know, I could have gone into a pity party or shook my fist at God, both of which I did for a while, and then decided to go back to my muscle memory, which is to write about it, and my doctors encouraged me, my mother encouraged me, and so I kept notes of what was happening to my mother, and she really taught me how to fight this. She, you know, everyone thinks that Alzheimer's is your grandfather's disease, and it's not. And that's probably the biggest challenge in raising money for more research, because people assume, well, you're 85, and, you know, anyone who doesn't think they're going to die someday, please raise your right hand.
Right.
And so, you know, bon voyage.
Absolutely. The day you're born, you start dying.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm writing a new book about that. So
really?
Beyond Pluto. That's the subject of my next book. But it's a disease that, you know, I work closely with the Cure Alzheimer's Fund of Boston. It's a disease that can take 20 years to run its course or more. And it's like having a sliver of your brain shaved every day. And, you know, I'm dealing off what doctors call a cognitive reserve. You know, my mother was a very bright woman, and so was my father. And I believe in Alzheimer's, you can protect for a period of time. I saw it with my mother, certain parts of your being that are essential. The left brain stuff on my side is in a free fall at times, but I am able to write and to speak, and with somewhat at times declining articulation, and it takes longer to do things. But, you know, I was saying someone the other day, the day when I put my fingers on the keyboard and I don't know what to do is the day I want to check out. And, you know, my mother fought it, and her when she let go, and I believe you can fight this, if you have the gift to fight it, and shame on me if I don't.
Got it.
And if I don't write about it. So.
Now, I have to ask you, though, do you even know that you're losing things?
Yeah. And I've always said this for anyone who's listening, there's a difference between forgetting where your car keys are and not knowing that you have keys.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between not being able to find your car and not knowing that you have a car. And I use an example of on Cape Cod, we take our trash to the dump because it's still kind of a summer place, and it's almost a social social place, which is funny. You'd think they'd have restaurants there. But that's a joke. You could laugh if you want. But,
okay. Yeah, it's almost you got to be careful where you laugh because I don't know. But yeah. You know what? It's wonderful to see you have a sense of humor, too.
Well, you have to. And so I my stuff off, and I turned around and said, okay, well, how do I get home now? And I said, well, geez, I could call my wife or my kids or someone will drop me off. And I drive a yellow freaking Jeep that was right in front of me, and my brain would not tell me that was my car. And Alzheimer's is like a loose plug in a socket where the plug gets loose and the light blinks, and you push the plug back in and it blinks some more, and you push the plug back in and the plug falls out. Pretty soon the plug is so loose it can't go back in the socket, falls out forever, and that's the progression.
Now, you say there are moments that you find just drifting. What do you mean by just drifting?
Well, there are a couple things. One, there are moments when you're not sure where you are, or you don't recognize people, and the brain is foggy like that. And there are other times when you're so, it's called the Alzheimer's gaze at times, where you're so tired of fighting this, which is 24/7, that you just let yourself drift out. And so I had to invent a place to go to. And when I was an investigative reporter and I was off record, I tell sources when I was in my 20s, we're going out to Pluto. Well, no one hears what you're saying. And it's all off the record. So, you know, that was a place, a word that I've used throughout my life.
Sure.
About things that we were talking about off record. And so I said, well, Pluto's the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where I go.
Now, we know that Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death, and it's on the rise, and especially earlier onset. Like you said, we always think of that as our, you know, parents or grandparents or whatever.
Right.
But what actually causes the death?
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor, as you know, and I took one biology course in high school and cut up a frog. But having said that, usually what Alzheimer's does is it breaks the mind and then the body down. And people generally die of complications from Alzheimer's. My mother died of a stroke.
Oh, okay.
Another person who I had met died because he couldn't ultimately tell the difference between swallowing and breathing. And it breaks your body down as well as your mind.
Hmm.
My body's deteriorating a little bit. I mean, if you saw me, you'd say, geez, it looks pretty athletic. But, you know, I was diagnosed recently with acute scoliosis, spinal stenosis, and degeneration of my spine.
Oh, boy.
And I haven't had feelings in my feet and parts of my hands for 3 or 4 years. So It's just brain signals not going to the right places.
Got it. Now, how old are your kids?
Well, Brendan is 31, and Colleen is 28, and Connor is 26.
How do they handle it?
Well, we were all in denial at first, but it's actually brought us more closer together. And they've all become part of the team. And, you know, whereas before we were always close, but not as close, now we're Team O'Brien. And, you know, Connor, my son Brendan, is a writer-producer in Boston, and my daughter Colleen teaches inner-city kids in Baltimore, and my wife, Mary Catherine, is a corner board for me. She's teaches special needs in middle school, and Connor works for me.
Amazing.
And he's my driver.
You know, I almost, and I've said this on the air before, and correct me if I'm wrong, I always feel that the person who eventually is into strong Alzheimer's, in other words, as you go and progress and things kind of go away, I feel bad for you, but I almost feel worse for the family because
they see it
happening.
And you know what? I don't want you to feel bad for me. I have a strong faith, and I'm not here to proselytize, and I'm the most imperfect human being in the world, so don't hold me up on a pedestal. But you know, I have a traditional Irish Catholic faith, and a little more evangelical now, but I always say, don't tell my relatives in Dublin because they'd stone me. But so I'm going to a better place. And this disease has shown me, okay, you're as imperfect as anyone else. So how can we clean up some of the rough edges? And that's happening in my life. And that's pretty cool. So you're right. I worry about the caregivers because people like me aren't going to remember someday.
Yeah.
And the caregivers, it's indelibly imprinted in their minds. And the caregivers, whether it's the wife or the kids, they're the heroes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I would feel, and I don't know how the family feels, but I would feel helpless. I want to do something for you, Dad, and I can't.
Well, but they can buy, and maybe this is advice. By the way, my book is in bookstores all around, but sometimes the best place to get it is Amazon.
Okay.
But the reason I said it, because I detail a lot of this in the book, but the kids are saying, we want to move away from the denial. How can we help? And because I think this is the other side of it, which is scary, I think they fear for themselves someday.
Well, if it runs in the family as strongly as you're saying,
yeah.
I can imagine.
And I had, I started the symptoms, and then I had a serious head injury. It's like football, where it head injury will not cause dementia, but it can bring it on earlier. And then I had the brain scan, the SPECT scan, the clinical test that confirmed the diagnosis, and then I also carry the Alzheimer's marker gene, APOE4.
Oh boy!
So it's not just one thing. It's how all those things link together. But I do worry about my children, and I worry about your children and grandchildren, and the children and grandchildren of all those who are listening. And it's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I believe it's the first book ever written by an investigative reporter from inside the mind of Alzheimer's. There are other fine books that have been written. They're novels, and they're wonderful. One's being made into a movie now, Still Alice, and everyone should see it. There's another movie out about Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me, that people should see. It's an incredible movie. Glenn Campbell's family is an exceptional family. And we need to start to talk about this disease and bring it out of the closet.
You know, what really amazes me is that the numbers, in 36 years, individuals 65 and older living with Alzheimer's will triple to almost 14 million people. Now, God willing, we'll maybe find some breakthroughs here, medical breakthroughs.
Yeah.
But why? We're seeing it young. How old are you now?
I'm 64.
64. So you, this came
no, to... No, 64. Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 59.
Okay. That's young.
Yeah.
And it seems to be getting younger. I mean, we're hearing about Alzheimer's of people in their 40s.
Well, I tell you, I was involved in a walk for Alzheimer's at Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play. And among other things I've done, I've been a consultant to the Kraft Group, Robert and Jonathan Kraft. And so they had a couple thousand people there, and they asked me to speak as well as others. There was one mother who spoke who just lost her son who was 30 years old from Alzheimer's, in his 30s.
Wow. You know, your kids should be so proud of you, and I bet they are.
Well, yeah, it's not for me to say, but...
Well, it is for me to say.
I think what I try to do is it's the message of how you fight something, how you take it on. And as I said before, I don't want anyone who's listening to think I'm imperfect, man. I'm the biggest dumbass Irishman you're ever going to see. but I have a fighter in me.
Yeah.
And that's part of who I am. It's a fighter.
So what do you do to slow the progress of Alzheimer's?
Well, the biggest thing, and again for people listening, is get some exercise at whatever level you can. I exercise every day to exercise my brain, and I go to the gym and work out, and then usually I go write for an hour or two. So I end the day, and the sundown is difficult because when the light goes dark, it's distressing and disturbing. And I notice that more now, by the way, because on the East Coast anyway, you know, you really notice when daylight saving time is gone, it gets dark. So I mean, it can be dark like it. Right now, it's, you know, 4 o'clock and it's dark. Or whatever. What time is it there?
Oh, we're at about, well, just a little bit before 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
All right, yeah. So I'm a little before 5 here and it's dark.
Right.
So, you know.
Now, why does that distress you?
Well, it's the easiest thing is for, again, people listening, Google sundowning. And there's something in the brain when the light fades and goes dark that causes greater confusion.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're on a computer, you'll see it if you Google sundowning.
Excellent. Yeah. Do you think they'll find a cure for Alzheimer's?
Eventually, yeah. You there?
Yeah, well, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it will be like cancer in the sense they found a
gene.
Well, no, they can cure some cancers, but not all.
Right.
So I don't think there's a magic wand here.
Well, and they're also talking about so many things about finding the gene, the one
yeah,
that
and
causes
I, and I,
the problem.
I think they frankly will do great work in slowing, preventing, isolating people predisposed. But, you know, I think people like me are we're on the track, you know.
Are you on meds?
Yeah. I take 23 milligrams of Aricept. That helps us have this conversation now, and 20 milligrams of Namenda that restarts the brain, and 20 milligrams of Selexia to fight depression on this, and 50 milligrams of Trazodone that I don't take because it makes me loopy, and I refuse to take it.
Amazing. You are an amazing person. I know you don't want me to tell you that, but you are because you're an inspiration to others.
My family is amazing, and they,
well,
you know, my wife and kids, and they're the ones that give me reason to press on, you know? I just get up every day and do it.
Yeah, but you do it, and you press on. I mean, you keep going forward, where a lot of people would just crawl into a hole someplace and say, okay, that's it.
You know, hold that thought, as they say. That's what I find, that if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. And you have to fight hard to move forward. And so that's what I'm fighting hard to do. And if I don't move forward, I drift backwards. And I don't want to do that.
No. Well, and the thing is, too, you have a brain still there and still functioning. And as long as it's there, you are contributing. And contributing immensely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a matter of, you know, I believe using your God-given talents for as long as you can.
Right.
And there are left brain stuff that I can't do anymore. As you know, as I said before, I regularly don't recognize people. A couple of times, including my own wife, I get lost in familiar places, deal with tremendous rage when I pick up a telephone and don't remember how to dial, or I pick up my lawn sprinkler and don't know what it is and get so angry I throw it against a tree to break it in a million pieces and... but you just say, hey, I have this saying, in the book I use a different word, but I can't on air, but I'll paraphrase, these demons don't know who they're screwing with. And
excellent.
That's, I got to say that every day.
But again, you keep going forward no matter what, instead of just sitting back and saying, okay, I'm not going to do anything about it because there isn't anything I can do about it. You keep trying.
Well, I hate the letter P-I-T-Y, and I think there are a lot of bad things that happen in life. I have cancer too, and I think you know that. I'm not treating it, and it's an exit strategy for me. It's prostate cancer, another slow mover. But that's not out of pity. That's just out of the reality of where this disease goes. And so you gotta keep the fight, whether it's cancer or heart disease or a divorce or a loss of a loved one. You know, mourning is very, very important. You know, but after the morning part is done, you know, you gotta get back on your horse, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think you realize how much of a benefit what you're doing and the book that you've written and the inspiration that you give to people and the hope that you give to people, because once we lose hope, I don't care what you have. It could be heart, it could be cancer, it could be loss of whatever. Once you give up hope, you've given up life.
Well, yeah, and I define hope, and I'll let people define this three-letter word in any way they want. I define hope as God, and because you have to reach for something in hope, and that's what I reach for, and hope does not disappoint. And so, yeah, you got to have hope in life. You know, does it suck? Yeah. Hopefully I could say that word.
Yeah, and it does.
It does suck. Are you kidding me? It sucks big time. But, you know, what about all the other people, you know, what about the young kids at children's hospitals around the country?
Yeah.
What about in places around the world where men and women and children are being slaughtered? What, you know, I you know, you look at all that stuff and you say, you know what, screw, you know, feeling sorry for myself. Why don't I just do something about it and get off my ass and do something?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for 35 years, doing talk shows, and I've spoken to so many people, including Dr. Eben Alexander. He wrote The Map of Heaven, and
mm-hmm.
he was a scientist who really didn't believe in anything
right.
yeah, until it happened to him. And, you know, too many people that I've spoken to think that this is it. This is not. This is just a step.
Yeah.
And we move
no,
on
the
to the next
room.
Step. Yes.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're totally right. And so, you know, you have an opportunity to do some of the right things here. And you can't do it without hope, which is to say, from my background, you can't do it without God.
Right.
But that's just me, and that's my personal opinion, and I'm not trying to take odds with anyone else over that. I'm just trying to explain me, because you asked me what makes me tick.
And God is in all of us.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something out there that we reach for. We're part of it.
Yeah.
And if we would just think of it that way, this is a learning place. This is a lesson place. You know, hopefully we learn enough lessons so we don't have to keep coming back. But, you know,
well,
just...
if I could tell a brief anecdote, you got a
yeah.
brief anecdote, newspaper. I'm at the Boston Herald as a young man, and I was writing a lot of the front page stories. And when John Lennon died, I was asked to write an appreciation piece, interviewing people all over the country and the world. And I went through my list, and finally I heard that there was a bishop in Boston, because I was at the Boston Herald, who was a big Lennon fan. So I called him, and he's espousing, you know, why he liked about Lennon and all that. And then I asked him the question, which it was a quote from Lennon that's been taken out of context, but it gets to kind of the come to Jesus moment that we'll all have someday, or the come to God moment, where I said, Bishop, tell me how you feel about Lennon's a comment that the Beatles were more popular than Christ. And again, that quote has been taken out of context in terms of what Lennon meant. But
mm-hmm.
he paused and he said, I wonder what John's thinking now.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, you're going to have that I wonder what you're thinking now moment at some point. We all have to. We're all on that journey.
Yep.
And when are you going to start to think about it? I'm not here to provide the answers.
Have to find your own answers.
You got to find your own answers, but... I've talked to so many people in life who say, well, I worry about it later, and to which I say, well, I wonder what you'll be thinking then,
mm-hmm.
because that line from the bishop about John Lennon was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
And I think Lennon would have appreciated that more than anyone else.
You betcha. Now, do you have a website?
Yeah, on Pluto.org.
Okay.
And
the book available every place, including
Well, the book
Amazon.
Is in bookstores, but sometimes the easiest place is go on Amazon, so...
You bet. I want to thank you, Greg. I want to talk to you again. Would you
okay.
come back
well,
again?
I would love to do it any time, and this is an honor. And as I said before, part of my extended family used to live in Sacramento, and I've been there many times, so it's a special place to me.
Fantastic, and you're a special person to us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Please, we're
right.
going to have you back again. And God bless and your family, and just stay strong and have hope and have love.
All right. Thank you. God bless you.
You too.
All right, okay.
Greg O'Brien, On Pluto is the name of the book. Unbelievable story, folks. And I want to thank you for being with us on Pop Off. And as I always say, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream. That dream is always there. Stay love. Bye-bye now.